Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's time for the Funville Nine, driven by AAA, the official weekly podcast of the Richmond Flying Squirrels. Here's your host, Trey Wilson.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Funville Nine podcast, driven by AAA. My name is Trey Wilson. I'm the play-by-play broadcaster for the Richmond Flying Squirrels, as well as the Director of Communications. And on this week's episode, we've got a very fun guest. We've got Flying Squirrels All-Star second baseman Jalen Miller, who we'll be getting to in just a little bit. In case you've missed it, we've been opening up the ballpark for movies in the outfield every Thursday and Saturday night. Come hang out at the Diamond in a safe, socially distanced environment and take advantage of this unique opportunity to come out and watch a movie from the outfield grass at the Diamond. We've had some great movie lineups. We'll be announcing more as time continues to go on throughout this summer. You can see every upcoming showing. You can place your order for your food before you get to the ballpark, get tickets, all of that at squirrelsbaseball.com/movies. And now let's get to our chat with Jalen Miller. Jalen is a second baseman for the Richmond Flying Squirrels out of Atlanta. He was selected by the San Francisco Giants in the third round of the 2015 MLB draft out of high school. And from there, he worked his way up to join the Flying Squirrels last year in 2019. He had a huge first half of the season with Richmond last year that landed him a selection as an Eastern League All-Star, got him a spot in the Eastern League All-Star game at the Diamond last July. Jalen is a bright personality in the Flying Squirrels clubhouse and a talented ball player as well. And we're going to have some fun chatting with him today. Jalen, thanks so much for taking some time to join us on this week's episode. When we started to put together the process of doing this, you were absolutely one of the guys that I wanted to make sure that we had a chance to bring on here and talk to. I had so much fun working with you with the team last year. I'm really appreciative of you taking some time to join us for this week's episode.
Oh yeah, no problem. You know, last year we did have a lot of fun in Richmond, especially going to the Baseball Hall of Fame. We were up in New York for a little bit, so I know this is about to be fun too.
Yeah, that's definitely something that we're going to hit on as we get going through this conversation. That's such an interesting moment in the middle of the season. I definitely want to talk about that in just a bit. But right now, where are you at? I thought you were still in Georgia, and you were still there until recently, but you've made your way out to Arizona now, right?
Yes, I made my way up to Arizona with Bryce Johnson. We're living together, and we're just training up at Jacob Gonzalez's house. And it's like me, Jacob, Bryce, and Hayward, and Sean Dunston, and we're just over there, you know, just grinding every day. Some of us are waiting to see if we can get the call to the 60-player pool, and others just grinding until next season or whenever the next time they ask us to play.
Yeah, it's got to be a really weird time. I mean, it's a weird time for everybody in the world right now, obviously, but certainly in the life of a baseball player where you're trying to figure out how to keep yourself sharp. What are y'all doing out there each day to kind of stay baseball ready in case you get added to that 60-man pool, or if you don't get a chance to play in any real live games this year and you have to wait till 2021? How are y'all staying sharp as a group?
As a group, you know, we go through our normal routines. We start off stretching, and then we go through our cage routines. And I think a lot that's been helping us stay ready has also been hitting off the machine, just seeing velo consistently. You know, Jacob has a pretty good setup at his house where we can go sliders if we want, right hand, left hand. It can make it sink if we want, straight four seam, two seam. So at least we're seeing something with some movement and not just, you know, underhand flips every day. That's been a big part of, you know, our development, I guess you could say, during this weird time. And, you know, just throwing. I guess the hardest part about this whole situation is just knowing how hard to work, because you don't know how close you are to playing.
Yeah, certainly could be a situation where you can't really take your foot off the gas too much, but you also can't overdo it. You could get the call that you're mm-hmm. going to be joining the player pool, and you have to be ready in a moment's notice, but at the same time, you can't really settle in. I guess you can't really settle in any kind of routine with that setup.
No, you can't at all. And, you know, that's the most difficult part right now. And I know a lot of guys, you know, are having to deal with their states shutting down, just different facilities and gyms. So they're trying to find things to do. You know, that's probably the best part about being out here in Arizona, since it's kind of a private cage. Since stuff is shut down, we're still able to get our work in.
One of the things that I've noticed that has been really weird about this summer, with all the weird stuff that's going on in the world, for people like me and certainly for people like you, we're not used to having any free time during this time of year. And even working out as much as you probably are, it's not like you're on the bus every day and showing up at the ballpark at 11 o'clock and not leaving until 11 or 12 at night. How are you passing the time that you wouldn't normally have from February through September, or some years even into October?
Yeah, a big part of the a big chunk of the time has definitely been split between fishing and video games, so playing Call of Duty. When I was back home in Atlanta, we had, since there's a bunch of pro guys out there in Georgia, mm-hmm. we would have inter squads every Wednesday, or just live BPs. And the place where I was at was where I went fishing. So as soon as we'd get done about, we start about 9, get done around 12:31, and I would fish from about 12:30 till maybe 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, you know, when the sun starts to go down back home. So that's basically what I was doing, and I enjoyed it a lot. It's the most fishing I've done since I've been in pro ball, because I've actually had the time to do it, or the energy to do it per se, to stay out there so long.
Yeah, I know a lot of guys spend their time playing golf, and even in the season playing golf and stuff, and you see a few guys who sneak away and go fishing. I know we had a few guys with the team who would do that here in Richmond last year. Did you ever get to go fishing up here in Richmond?
Yeah, me, Matt Wynn, and Overton used to go to Wynn's buddy's place. We used to fish on the off days.
That's a good way to pass some time. I don't know about fishing in Arizona. Is there really anywhere to go fishing out there? I didn't even know if there's any water anywhere near Scottsdale or Phoenix.
I think there's a lake out here, but it's pretty far from Phoenix. There's a few ponds you can find around parks that are stocked, but nothing natural that like I was fishing at back home. So I guess that'll be the hardest part, is finding those natural places to go fish out here that won't be too hot, you know, because ain't no trees out here. At least back home we had some trees you could stand up under, but here you're just out baking, hoping you catch something.
Yeah, it's a much different climate for Scottsdale versus Richmond or Atlanta. The Richmond and Atlanta climates are pretty similar, and at Scottsdale you're in the middle of the dryness all the time. You mentioned all the ball players there in the Atlanta area, and our team last year in Richmond, we had a bunch of Atlanta guys with you and Jacob Hayward, and then later in the year, Joey Bart. There were a few others throughout the year. Is there a connection with teammates in pro ball that comes from growing up in the same area, even if you're of a different graduating class or you're a few years apart? Is there any kind of connection as you climb the ladder and play in professional baseball with guys who come from your home?
Oh, yeah. You mostly, growing up in Georgia, like if you play baseball, everyone knows everyone. I can just say from my draft class, some big names like Das Cameron, like me and him played together in high school. Tyler Stevenson with the Reds, Jemai Jones with the Angels, Taylor Trammell, who's with the Padres now, Cornelius Randolph with the Phillies. Like at some point, I played against all of those guys multiple times growing up, just doing little workouts together, especially before the draft. You meet a lot of people. And so everyone in Atlanta is really connected. It's kind of crazy the baseball community that you have there, because literally everyone knows everyone.
What was your baseball interest like growing up in Atlanta? I know you played, but were you a Braves fan since you were so close to the city? Was it just the game that you played? Did you follow the big league baseball? What was your fandom of baseball like as a kid?
Definitely the Braves, because, you know, we were nothing to show for it from the time I was born, but we won a division for like 13, 14 years straight growing up. So, you know, that was definitely the number one team in Atlanta. Everyone rooted for the Braves. I obviously had favorite players on other teams like A-Rod and Jeter, but it was definitely Braves or bust for me. Like, I remember, I think like in the late 2000s, probably like 2009 through like 2011, we kept losing to the Cardinals and the Dodgers and the NLDS. And to this day, I despise the Cardinals. And then just getting drafted by the Giants just made it that much easier to hate the Dodgers because of all those early outings.
Now, I grew up a Braves fan living in Virginia. There were a lot of Braves fans here. And then living outside of Atlanta some when I was a kid too, off to the east side of Atlanta, I actually road tripped down for one of those playoff games against the Dodgers at Turner Field, and the Braves ran into Clayton Kershaw, and it was just one of those nights that you saw it play out so many times, and it was a constant source of frustration if you were a Braves fan in that era, especially somebody like you who was too young to remember when they won the World Series in 95. You would have just been, were you born yet in 95?
No, I wasn't. I was born in 96, the year after.
Oh, yeah, you just missed it.
I'm the curse.
of course, growing up a Braves fan, following the Braves. Last year in Richmond, we had Brandon Beachy on the team, who was a standout with the Braves for a few years when you were a kid. Do you remember watching Beachy with Atlanta when you were growing up?
I do a little bit. Playing with him was cool. Because we already work, like I said, about the whole entire network of Atlanta and everything. Like, we work out together and back home in Atlanta in the off season, so we kind of already knew each other before he came to the Giants. But just playing with him in general, I remember I would text some of my buddies. I'd be like, dude, like, Beachy's on my team now, you know, and they're like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Like, I remember when he first came up with the Braves, he was so good. You know, that whole pitching staff that was coming up with, like, him and Hanson, Medlin, they were filthy. Mm-hmm. And Julio Teheran when they first came up. So it was definitely pretty cool playing with him.
Yeah, it was a shame to watch the injuries that he ran into for so many years, because he was so good when he got to the majors in, about a decade ago or so. And it was great to see him get a chance to, and I hope he gets another chance if it's something that he wants to do. It was cool to get to see him have some success in Richmond, and hopefully that, if he's not ready to hang it up, that somebody picks him up and he plays somewhere. Going into the 2015 draft, you were a player who was drawing a good bit of attention. I know you had some offers from some of the big powerhouse programs in college baseball. You ended up committing to Clemson. With all that in mind, what was your MLB draft process like?
You know, it kind of started later than others, I will say, like that year before when they really start telling kids like, hey, you know, this is something you need to have in the back of your mind. Like I said, being from Atlanta, you kind of know so many players who have gotten drafted. Like, we had two kids from my high school that got drafted 2 years before. So definitely learning from those guys helped out during the process. It was one of those things where if I went back and did it again, it was so stressful at times. I don't know if I'd want to go through it another time. Definitely would want to get drafted, but the process and the teetering between, am I going to school or am I just about to forego college altogether? That whole process was very weird. And, you know, it was pretty hard for a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid to make that decision. You know, it is what it is. Now I'm here. I'm happy about it. And it's fun.
Yeah, I can't imagine being in those shoes at such a young age where, you know, you're getting talked about going in those first couple of rounds in the draft. You end up getting taken in the third round, and now you've got to make this decision of, do I follow this professional path or go off to school? What was the draft days, I guess, because 3-day draft at that point. What were the draft days like, waiting to hear your name get called?
Since I got drafted on the second day, the first day was definitely the most stressful day of my whole life, because the whole day you have teams calling you, asking you, like, a big thing is they ask for your number. So it's basically like the amount of money that you would sign for, the least, you know, what do you want, or what's the least amount you sign for. And you're just constantly telling teams this stuff over and over. And I had a few teams call and tell me, like, I think the Astros called and was like, hey, you know, if you're still available at this pick, you're our guy. So I'm in my head, I'm like, this is what I've been training for. It's finally about to happen. And the 10 minutes lasted forever. And the name came up, and I forgot who they picked instead, but it wasn't in Tucker's spot and it wasn't in Daz's spot. I think it was the pick after Daz, one of their other comp round picks or second round pick. They called and was like, hey, you know, we want to take you if you're available. They didn't end up picking me. And at that time, that just broke me completely. That I was like, what is going on? You know, like, are these teams just calling to see if they can, like, mess around with me a little bit? Like, you know, the whole process of it in general is tough for me to understand. And stuff like that happening where a team will call and tell you that they're going to pick you if you're available, and you're available, you don't pick you, was very hard. But the second day obviously was a lot better for me. You know, I didn't even know the Giants had picked me until I got, I think, a text message from my buddy and saying congratulations. And I literally texted him back. I was like, congratulations for what? He goes, you just got drafted by the Giants. And I yelled at my mom upstairs, told her, then I finally got a call from our area scout with the Giants. And he, you know, let me know the whole situation. And then, yeah, that was it. Number 95.
The Giants showed, it seemed like they were pretty interested in you. Had you talked much with them prior to the draft? Was it one of the teams that was on your radar?
No, they actually weren't. They and I've heard this from multiple guys who've gotten drafted. Like, we didn't even know definitely more interest from other teams than the Giants just drafted you. And you're like, oh, all right, here we go.
At AAA, we've seen breakdowns, lockouts, and full stops. 118 years of them. So trust us when we say we can get through anything by navigating it together. See how we're helping to keep you safe. Visit AAA.com/keepmoving.
Once you signed and started your pro career, your first three seasons, they were a little bumpy numbers-wise. Then in 2018, you repeated with San Jose and High A, and you had a really good year in 2018. What flipped for you those first 3 years versus 2018?
I think it was just experience. Yeah, just experience hitting wise for me, when I was in high school, I was definitely defense first. I could still hit, but the hitting for me was just more of, I could go up there and do it. There wasn't much approach involved for me. So getting a pro ball for me, finding my approach, learning myself as a hitter at that point, especially knowing that I'm going to get stronger. I think that's the hard part for high school kids who aren't as big at that young stage, like some of these guys that are getting drafted now at 18, hitting 450 foot home runs. That was a big thing. So I know my averages then just came from me just not being as strong as I could be hitting wise. That extra 5 miles per hour on the ball is the difference between a hit and an out sometimes. And I think that third year in San Jose, just getting bigger, stronger, and just learning hitting a little bit better definitely helped out.
Well, even with the numbers being a little bit lower, the Giants still moved you up pretty consistently. You skipped over Salem Kaiser. By the time you got to Richmond, after repeating San Jose, you got to Richmond in 2019. You were the youngest player on the team for a good bit of that year, and you were still a couple of years below the average age of players in the Eastern League. But it being your fifth professional season last year, does it feel like it had been a slow process to that point, or is it something that you keep in mind that where you're at relative to your age is on schedule or kind of ahead of schedule of where the normal eventual major league player is?
You know, I felt like it was where I should have been. It is, with social media, is very easy to get caught up in the where I should be at the time, especially with your guys like Kyle Tucker, who kind of just flew through, Brendan Rodgers. You know, if I were to look at those guys, which I did early on, which definitely hurt me, I'm trying to push to be where they're at, not knowing that, like, you know, it's like a handful of guys like that that'll get drafted out of high school that will fly that fast. But I think one thing that helped me was with the year I was supposed to get drafted, basically the year Joey got drafted, seeing where I was and seeing where they were at the same time, knowing that my development had been going at the same pace or the correct pace it was supposed to go at. And just, like I said, getting older and understanding where I was supposed to be definitely helped out. And just, you know, calming down with having a debut at 21 and definitely helped me out a little bit during that 2018 season.
Kyle Haynes, who's the director of player development for the Giants and former Flying Squirrels manager a few years ago as well, but he said in an interview last year with Baseball America that you are very emotionally mature and can handle struggles that most players your age can't. And it seemed to be last year that you were in the same spirits whenever I was around you, whether you were in a long slump or in a hot stretch, or just like you're talking about there with coming to an understanding of your development pace as you climb up the minor leagues. How do you keep yourself so level, not too high and not too low? Because that's something that some guys don't ever grasp that throughout their career, but it seems to be something that you've got a pretty good handle on.
You know, I've kind of been like that my whole life, so it hasn't been, it's like nothing that I really, I guess, trained for. I honestly think it was just, like, my mom is so laid back. As a person, I think I get a lot of my personality from her. And I think that has a lot to do with it, just growing up, seeing her, how she handled things. And me and her are definitely the same way, and my brother and my dad are the same way. And, you know, she's pretty level-headed. I can count on a handful of times I've seen her just get really angry, and I can say I'm probably the exact same way. But yeah, I guess I could contribute that to taking karate, taekwondo growing up a little bit, you know, learning your inner self as I was at such a young age. But other than that, that's the only thing I could think of.
Back in 2018 with San Jose, you accomplished a feat. You were part of a feat that it's believed has never happened before until that night when Gio Brusa hit a triple in the eighth inning and hit for the cycle. You ended up joining him in hitting for the cycle in that same game. And according to all the research that anybody's shown out there, there's never been a team prior to that night, it's believed, where two teammates hit for the cycle in the same game. When you're stepping in the box and you know that you're that close to hitting for the cycle and joining Gio and the accomplishment that he just had, were you really aware of what was happening in that moment, that you had a chance to make some serious minor league history?
I didn't know the first fact that you said, that it could have been the first time it is the first time recorded, at least, that has happened. I didn't know that, so I guess I didn't put that much pressure on myself. If I would have known, it probably would have been some added pressure. Once Gio hit his triple, I didn't know that I could also hit a triple in the next inning and hit for the cycle. But the guy we were facing, Justin Lawrence, you know, sidearm to top out at, I think, 101 from sidearm with the Rockies. I actually went up to the plate with another bat because I didn't want to break the bat that I already gotten all the hits with before, because I thought it was my lucky bat. So I literally just got up there looking just to make contact and hoping it would go somewhere in the outfield. And if it touched the outfield grass, I told myself I was going to keep running because we were up by so many runs. And, you know, I got up there, took two pitches. I was 2-0. And I kind of told myself, like, you know, if I see it in this little zone right here, just swing hard, you hit it, run, you know, just step out, take a deep breath. And I happened to hit it, started running, was already thinking three, saw the center fielder who I think it was Force Wall at the time, dove for it, got past him. And as soon as he got past him, you know, I didn't think about it again until I slid the third and I saw Mac Marshall in the dugout. And he looked at me and kind of like mouthed the words like triple, I mean, or like triple, like you hit for the cycle to me. And I was so tired from him to triple, all I could do was nod in a yes manner. Got back into the dugout, then everyone else realized it. And it was one of the best feelings. I don't even know. I guess I'd have to win a World Series to get that feeling again, or maybe hit for the cycle in my debut. I don't know. But it was definitely awesome.
Such a cool, unique thing. And not just in minor league history has it not happened that it's recorded, but in major league history. And this is baseball history going back well over a century, that there's no other example of this happening where two teammates, same team, hit for the cycle in the same game. And because of that, the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, they wanted to have some mementos to memorialize this. So they called up, they got a few items sent out there. And then you and I last year and Jake Eisenberg, former Squirrels broadcaster, when we were in Binghamton, New York, we took a trip up to Cooperstown so that you could get a chance to see some of those mementos in the Baseball Hall of Fame, honoring something that you did. Now, I'm sure every kid who grows up playing baseball and who thinks that they have a chance to play professional baseball, they hope that they end up getting something in Cooperstown one day and ultimately hope that they end up getting inducted. But what was it like for you to go see some mementos to something that you were a part of in the Baseball Hall of Fame library before you've even gotten to the big leagues yet?
I still remember in San Jose when Joe Rizzo said they asked for the card, I was kind of in awe. And then, you know, y'all taking the time to, you know, set up everything last year, then us waking up together and driving up there, you know, as soon as we stepped foot in the hall, I got chills just because I haven't been there in a minute. And then when we got to the library, I don't think the chills left my body until probably the game started later that day. It was so awesome seeing something that I've done with Gio Brusa, someone else who's just amazing dude, and just being in the Hall of Fame against the guys we grew up rooting for, rooting against, hearing our parents, our grandparents talk about. It's just a surreal feeling. And I'm glad that me and Gio, you know, did what we did, and that y'all took the time to give me the opportunity to go up there and see it last year. It was just awesome.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. I've been to the Hall of Fame several times in recent years, and it never gets old to walk in there.
Yeah.
You walk around those hallways and you see these pieces of artifacts from moments that you've heard about. You see Babe Ruth's uniform and you see the Hank Aaron section. I know for you as somebody who grew up in Atlanta was something that you wanted to stop and see, and you see some of the things from his career. And it's just, it's hard to explain how cool going to Cooperstown is. And certainly when you know that something that you were a part of is in the library and in the archives next to all of these other pieces of baseball history, that's such a cool thing. What for you, aside from, of course, the obvious, getting to see the scorecard from your own double cycle game, but what for you about going to the Hall of Fame stood out as something that hit you while we were up there in Cooperstown?
Last year, it was two things. Like you said before, love the Hank Aaron part of the exhibit that they have, you know, just being a Braves fan and just the history. And then seeing one of our coaches, Gene Klein, I didn't realize that he was a part of the first ever all-black starting nine in baseball history with the Pirates. And seeing that and learning about that was just amazing because, you know, like I love Gene just in general as a human and as a coach also. And just knowing that I get to, you know, take instruction for him and just listen to him talk about the players that he's played with throughout his whole entire baseball time, and just him being a part of just history in general, not just baseball history. It's just one of the coolest things that I didn't even know about at the time. To this day, I still look at that picture. I have it on my phone, and I just think it's really cool.
Founded in 1996, SICOM is an award-winning IT systems integrator headquartered in Richmond with offices throughout Virginia. Their focus is on mid-Atlantic companies, healthcare organizations, educational institutions, and governments looking to improve their technology return on investment. SICOM is a trusted partner to deliver a range of IT solutions and services that keep companies connected. Named as one of the top workplaces in Richmond, SICOM is also the employer of choice for the best talent in the region and are committed to providing outstanding and memorable service.
Let's look back at last year kind of as a whole. Coming into Richmond, your first year in AA and your first year being in Richmond, Virginia with the Flying Squirrels. Coming into the season, had you heard much about what playing in Richmond was like and what that experience was going to be like for you last year?
Oh, yeah, I definitely heard. I heard it from the time I got drafted. You know, you hear about Augusta and Richmond. Well, the old Lake Olmsted Stadium in Augusta and then the Diamond in Richmond, just about how it's not hitter friendly at all. And, you know, coming into Richmond last year, I had a bunch of confidence coming off my season before, coming off a great spring. and you still hear the diamond, you know, you got to get the ball out of the air at the diamond. You got to do this, you got to do that. You know, it definitely weighs on you a little bit. But by the time I got to Richmond, I kind of got all of it out of my head, you know, started out hot and then eventually saw the effects that Richmond can have on, you know, players, average, OPS, all those numbers, and just the mental side of it. You know, Richmond's not no joke. And everything that they said was true about it.
Yeah, and you happened to also be in the Eastern League last year in a year where we saw pitching numbers across the board that we've never seen since they lowered the mound back. I think it was the lowest league batting average since 1972, and the ERA numbers were down at some of the lowest in the league's history. So you caught it not only in having to play half of your games in a really pitcher-friendly park in the first place, but also in just a year where pitching, for whatever reason, really seemed to have the upper hand. While in AAA, of course, we saw the offense numbers with them using the major league ball kind of skyrocket. So there's a big difference when you look at the numbers from AA players and what they were doing in the Eastern League last year, where if you look at your, say, batting average for 2019, you might say, man, that's a rough year. But your batting average was kind of more indicative of how the whole league was last year, right? Is it something that you keep in mind, or is it just like, I'm throwing it away, I'm moving on to the next year and getting ready for whenever I'm playing baseball again, and those numbers are not really part of the story?
You know, it's definitely something that was in the back of my mind at the end of last year, especially seeing all of the AAA numbers. It's tough because you don't want to hit that low ever. And just seeing at the end of the year where your stats are, and just knowing that as a person, you know, no matter what anybody else says, like outside of baseball, even if coaches say it in the organization, even though they do know what Richmond is like, knowing that you aren't what my stats were at the end of the year, you know, I'm not that hitter at all.
For sure.
So that's the mindset that I had coming into this season. I was like, basically, even if I were to go back to Richmond, if I were supposed to go back to Richmond this year, I wasn't even going to think about last year. I was just going to basically go into the same mindset as I did my second year in San Jose. And that was basically keep playing, you know. Just forget about what happened before. Baseball is kind of what have you done for me lately? And, you know, I was still in a good spot. Like you said, I was still very young for the league and everything. So I was definitely excited about where I was going to start, no matter where I started at last year.
Yeah, I think we saw a lot of good flashes of what you can do. And, you know, being so young for the league, that there were still a lot of people who spoke really highly about your skills. And, you know, I was looking forward to getting a chance to seeing you back on the field for 2020. Unfortunately, for now, for you, unless you get added to the pool, that's not happening. But really looking forward to seeing what 2021 brings. But let's keep it on 2019 for just a minute. I want to talk about a moment. Mm-hmm. You were front and center for a handful of memorable moments last year in the Richmond season. And June 12th last year, there was one of those games where bats just weren't really working for Richmond. That happened a few times. And Flying Squirrels getting no hit. In fact, got no hit through nine innings, and we're thinking upstairs, you guys have no idea what's going on upstairs where we are in the booth, but the Flying Squirrels have never been hit in franchise history, and we don't want to see that happen. And then y'all got no hit through nine innings, and then the pitching staff had kept Harrisburg scoreless that whole game, so we went to the 10th inning, still keeping in mind that there's a no-hitter going. Harrisburg doesn't score in the top of the 10th. You come up in the bottom of the 10th, they got a runner on second, and you got a base hit to not only break up the no-hitter, but also a walk-off single. What was going through your mind as you stepped into the box there?
Basically, I just wanted to put something in play. Like you said, that was one of those nights where nothing was falling in general, and I definitely tried harder than others at different at bats. Not saying I didn't try harder from my beginning at bats, but like I feel like I was trying too hard later on in the game to get a hit. That's why I was probably striking out or not getting a hit. So I just told myself just to relax, take a nice level swing, and hopefully the ball goes somewhere where someone's not, because it definitely hasn't been happening all night. And I hit it kind of off the end of the bat, and I knew I hit it perfect in that little, there's like this little area right behind the infield that's like maybe 10 feet back from the infield grass and maybe like 25 feet forward from the outfield, that you hit just soft enough, is guaranteed like basically almost a hit, unless you got some freak in the outfield like that, like Derek Hill out there. And I knew I hit it just soft enough, and I was just running, and I saw the shortstop going back, and the only thing was just don't let anything crazy happen like it had been happening all year. And I saw it fall, and the joy from getting hit, not having to play any more extra innings, not having to go back on defense, and then just the fact that we got no hit and still won off of one hit was just all that euphoria just hit me at one time. Also with the Gatorade, it was just an amazing feeling.
Well, that brings up something that I definitely want to talk about. So let's talk about cooler dumps, Gatorade baths. You got one that night for getting the walk-off winning hit, and this was kind of a fun story as we went throughout the year. I know that later in the season, there was a walk-off grand slam by Jacob Hayward where Jhenasree Fargis and Sean Gelly tried to get Hayward with the cooler dump, but they got you instead. And I asked Hayward about it when he was on the show with us a few weeks ago and got his side of the story. And what's your side of that story? So Jacob Hayward hits a walk-off grand slam in the 10th inning. Flying Squirrels win. Y'all are all celebrating at home plate. And here comes Gelly and Fargis with the Gatorade cooler. They try and dump it on Hayward. Missed by like 8 feet, right? Get you. Perfect shot. What happened there?
You know, the cooler just always finds me. You know, I know I was probably one of the first ones out as soon as Hayward hit the grand slam. So I was probably near him. And I could probably tell you, I probably saw the Gatorade coming out and probably tried to get in the way. But yeah, I got hit by the water. And it's not even the first year. I've been getting hit by coolers my whole life when it comes to walk-offs like that. I remember Augusta, I used to get hit all the time. And in San Jose, it was the same thing. We had a week where we had probably like 4 walk-off wins. I think I got soaked every night. Didn't matter.
The one for the Hayward Grand Slam, I know they got you from behind. And I remember your reaction is like, it's branded into all of our minds of you almost like collapse, like, oh, they got me again. And from that point on, and or maybe not from exactly that point, but there were several times throughout the season where it seemed like you took over the role as I'm going to be the guy in charge of the Gatorade bath. And I know, first of all, was that something conscious where you said, I'm taking this over? And second, at a certain point, there was a couple of nights, I think, where you couldn't catch the guy after a walk-off win and you just dumped it on your own head. So how did all that go down?
You know, I think I realized that I'm the most accurate Gatorade cooler thrower on the team. And, you know, I gave those guys a shot at the beginning of the season. And once I got hit, I told myself, you know, this can't happen again. Cast it up on myself as soon as we got close. You know, you don't want to touch the cooler too early because you don't want to jinx it, but not too late where you have to dump it on yourself, which I enjoy doing. But, you know, I knew there was an art form to it. I practiced it, you know, before games with early work. You know, I kind of thought I just mastered it. So I was always the first one to the cooler. Even if someone was near it, I'd let them know, like, yo, come on. You know who's got the range. And I was pretty good with the wiggly walk you have to do out there because, you know, it's so heavy. You can't run straight. So you have to do like a little wiggle walk. And I think I just have the right aerodynamics for that, too. So I think everything just works out in the cooler department for me.
So your game day routine, you go, you're hitting in the cage, you know, maybe I'll take doing a little bit of extra work defensively, then you hit during BP, you go shag, and then you're going to grab that cooler just in case there's a walk-off at night and you're trying to make sure that you're consistent with your cooler delivery, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, start off after BP with some dry throws, no water, no liquid inside, and after that, you know, you can fill it up with whatever you want. Maybe throw some rocks in there to get the walk going straight. And after that, you're ready.
Yeah, you get the rocks to make it seem so it's heavier when you're doing the practice. But then when you actually go to do it for real, it's lighter. Kind of like with a donut on the bat in the on deck circle, right? So when you get it to
exactly,
it's light.
Because it's a fun fact. It depends on the clubby. Because if the clubby or the bat boy comes out and doesn't fill up the cooler the whole game, you don't have any ice, so it's lighter. But if you have a bat boy who's on this game, he fills it up with ice every other inning. You know, you got a heavier cooler. You know, it's just, it hurts sometimes when you throw that ice too hard. So you got to be conscious of that, too.
There was the one where the last weekend of the regular season, I'm pretty sure, Joey Bart had a walk-off double and you were on yes. Floor duty. And you got him. I mean, there's a picture of it, and I'll have to link it with this podcast online somewhere, but there's a picture of it. You got him square right in the face. The still shots that Caroline Phipps got from our staff, who was taking photographs that night, it's perfect. It's like a perfect stream of blue right into Joey Bart's head. That was art, Jalen. That one was, yes. That was art.
That was going to get framed in the room in the man cave in a few years.
That was execution to its finest on the cooler dumps. And whatever happens in your career, we hope you go on to play 20 years in the big leagues and you end up getting that plaque in Cooperstown. You make that trip back. But in Richmond, that picture is going to live on of you just nailing Bart with that cooler dump. And that will be,
yes.
That's your Richmond legacy right there.
Oh, man.
Last year, you had a pretty big first half. You got picked as an Eastern League All-Star, and you got to play in the Eastern League All-Star game in your home ballpark in front of your own hometown fans, your minor league hometown fans with Richmond. What was that experience like?
Man, those 3 days were so fun. Our guy Parney hooked it up, not just for the Richmond guys, but for everybody. Even I still use the backpack, you know, the Squirrels gave us for the All-Star game. Playing in front of the fans, doing the event in front of the fans with the hitting challenge. That was awesome. The concert was awesome. In the game, all the fans turning out, basically selling out the stadium, was really fun. And knowing that the reason we won the game was off of Hayward's home run, having a squirrel be the MVP at the end of the game just made it that much sweeter, especially after our poor showing at the hitting challenge the day before. We had to make up for it somehow.
The hitting challenge, there were a couple of guys that put on a real show, but when the big event came, when the main event came, it was contributions from Richmond players. We saw Caleb Berger got the start and pitched well, ended up getting the win. You helped set up some offense early in that game. Hayward hit the game's only home run. Tyler Sear and Melvin Adone came in and did work to finish it out of the bullpen. It was you couldn't have scripted it much better than that night went. And for us as an organization, that will go as one of the benchmark nights in the history of our franchise. It was such an awesome experience. For my career, it's one of the highlight nights, and I was just sitting upstairs talking about it on the radio. That was so cool to see all of y'all get a chance to have that experience in front of that great crowd that night, and also to actually make some contributions and to come through with winning it for the West.
Man, that was so fun. Oh, that was fun.
No minor league baseball in 2020. As you mentioned earlier, you're kind of in limbo right now, trying to stay ready in case you get added to the player pool for the Giants. But whatever happens for the rest of 2020 at this point, now that there's only going to be 60 major league games, no minor league games, for 2021, when you show up for spring training next year, if it gets to happen on time, and whenever the season does get to start, what do you want to see for yourself in the next season?
I basically just want to see the same fire that I have in my eyes right now, just coming from a player perspective. You know, this year I'll probably see a lot of guys debut that I've played against for the past few years. Guys that I know that we're either at the same level or I'm better than, and you know, that'll definitely be a fire lit in my eyes later on once the games get started. And I just want to keep that same mentality coming in, because I know that's the mentality that'll come out and make me the player that, you know, I need to be to eventually debut, which will hopefully be next year. I did feel really good this year about, especially during spring training. I thought I definitely would have played well enough to give myself a chance to be able to get that call. It happening next year, just being able to refine my craft these next, I guess, not even a couple of months, these next long months will be, I'll have no excuse for next year. So I'm definitely going to keep that fire. That's what I'm looking forward to for 2021.
Well, Jalen, we look forward to continuing to follow your journey, and we're going to celebrate like crazy when you get your name called and you get to walk out there on a major league field for the very first time and make that debut. And then for years after that, we'll be following you and cheering for you. Thanks so much for taking some time to join us for this and to talk through your baseball journey and your Richmond time. I had a lot of fun certainly talking about some of the more fun things from last year, like the Hall of Fame and the cooler dump excursions and those types of things. And I really appreciate you taking some time to join us this week, man.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me. It's always fun when we get together and start speaking baseball or just about the season last year.
Be well, Jalen. We'll talk to you soon.
And thanks so much to all of you for listening to this week's episode of the Funville 9 podcast, driven by AAA. Thanks so much to Jalen for taking some time to hang out and talk with us. A lot of fun in that conversation. You can go back and listen, of course, to all of the other conversations that we've had on this podcast. We had Parney on the debut episode. We had Steve Klein on last week's episode, Flying Squirrels pitching coach and a longtime major league pitcher. We've had a couple of other Flying Squirrels players, Jacob Hayward and Caleb Berger. And we also had former MLB pitcher and now co-owner of Center of the Universe Brewing Company, Chris Ray, on a few weeks back. All those episodes are available online at thefanrichmond.com on demand for your listening pleasure whenever you'd like. We'll be back with another episode next week. Until then, keep following the Flying Squirrels on social media at Go Squirrels on Twitter and Instagram, and Flying Squirrels Baseball on Facebook to see everything that we've got going on at the ballpark and any way that you can come hang out with us in a safe and socially distanced manner and join us for some of these activities that we've got going on. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next time on the Funville 9, driven by AAA.
You've been listening to the Funville 9, driven by AAA, the official podcast of the Richmond Flying Squirrels.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.